Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the third day of December 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Dave Dickey will have a look at today's agricultural news, and we'll hear the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'll also remind you of a couple of December University of Illinois Extension meetings that are coming up, both the week of December the 15th. The Illinois Farm Economic Summits will be on the road all across the state that week. If you haven't registered yet, hit the Farm Doc Daily website. A couple of new places that will be, including a new city. If you've not been to one of these meetings and you're in the Springfield, Illinois area, brand new to you this year, the Farm Economic Summits, it's a great meeting series to learn from the folks at the Farm Doc Daily website or the Ag Economist in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. The Ag Masters program from the Department of Crop Sciences is that same week as well, right here in Champaign on Monday and Tuesday at the I Hotel, December the 15th and 16th. More details as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking now the numbers on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in Chicago finished like this. The nearby corn in the December contract at 368 and three quarters was up one. March futures at 382, three quarters higher. And May corn futures on the settlement price at $3.90 and a half, up three quarters. July, 397 and a half, three quarters higher. Next year's December at $4.11 and three quarters, a penny and three quarters higher for the day. Soy complex bean futures 2.5 cents higher in the lead option. January at $9.98 and a quarter. March at $10.05 and a quarter, up 2 and a quarter, and the main futures $10.12 and a quarter, up 2 and a quarter. July contract at $10.17 and a quarter, 2.5 higher, and next year's November beans at $9.81 and three quarters, up 1 cent for the day. The bean meal on the afternoon at $3.81.10, down $2, and the bean oil 69 cents higher at $31.86. Soft red winter wheat in the July contract 13 and three quarters lower at $5.99, and the hard red July harvest month at $6.42 and a half, down 11 and a half cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished at 166.82 and a half, down $1.80 in the lead option December. Feeder at 235 and a nickel, down 50 cents, and the lean hogs for the day at 88.15, $1.35 lower. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Now let's look at the outside markets for the day. January contract at $67.32, up 44 cents. February at $67.41, up 41. And the March crude oil at $67.50, up 35 for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.13 and 3 tenths, 2 tenths, or rather 2 cents lower on the afternoon. And the gasoline in the RBOB at $1.80 and 7 tenths, that's 3 tenths of a cent lower. Natural gas for the day at $3.81 and 3 tenths, up 6 and a tenth of a cent, and ethanol futures at $2.26, 21 cents higher on the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 17,887. That's up 25 points. And the New York Gold at about $1,209, up $9.50. The dollar index in the December at 89 even is up 0.297 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Sunny skies, a high of 41 today. West-northwest winds at 7 and 9. Partly cloudy this evening and 22 Thursday, cloudy with a high near 35. East-west winds. East winds then at 5 to 7. And Thursday night, a chance of rain or freezing rain after 1 a.m. Cloudy, a low of 30 degrees. East-southeast winds at 7 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall set at 30%. Friday, that chance of freezing rain continues through 7 a.m. And then rain, cloudy, a high of 41 degrees. Friday evening, a 40% chance of rain and 33. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll hear, of course, from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Day afternoon. We're joined now by Jackie Vanks at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County to take a look at the agricultural commodity markets. Jackie, thanks for being with us. I want to start with crude oil because the price of crude has crashed, and it looks like it's going to stay low, as we talked with Harry Cooney yesterday in the ag energy market, for some time because OPEC decided they were going to, as Harry put it, defend their spigot or the supply of crude that's coming out rather than the price of crude. And it has a wide and broad impact across futures in all kinds of sectors. What's happening now?
It really does. In fact, if you look at crude oil right now, we're at the lowest prices we've seen since June of 2009. And that's significant because if producers roll back in their mind to 2009, we realize that that was not a very good year for us. Why? Because ethanol prices were higher than unleaded gasoline prices. At the moment, we did see production slip on the report that came out today. The margins are down, but at the moment they're still positive, so that's good. And it certainly has an impact on this new fracking business that we have going on here in the United States, because over the weekend, one of my sources told me that basically fracking exports just dried up outside the United States. And so I think that the statement, you know, that they're going to defend their spigot is exactly the truth. When you saw them come in and say they were not going to reduce it to push the price higher, and the Saudis were the ones that really were really adamant about that, I believe that that was being done in exactly what you and I have talked about before, an effort to slow down fracking. And then that has another tumble effect, because we saw rail shuttle car rates drop dramatically. $6,000 in October, supposedly $600 right now for a shuttle rate. That's huge. And what that implies, of course, is that maybe some of the grain will start moving around the way that it is supposed to. And so when you look at crude oil, I mean, crude is everywhere in everything, no matter how you look at it, in the clothing you wear, in the desks you work at, in the seats you sit on, it's just everywhere. And so it has far-reaching implications. And for us, I think that the most important one, of course, is the ethanol industry, because even if we drop prices and we spur demand for corn, if we lose usage on the ethanol side, we really don't make any headway. And so then let's add to that the fact that the U.S. dollars at, you know, hit 89 today. That's the highest price that we've seen there in the U.S. dollar since March of 2009. Just to put it into perspective, from an export impact standpoint, that the exchange rate today with Japan between the dollar and the yen is 1.1981. That means March 381 corn is 4.56 before you ship it. That is going to come home to roost on us at some point in time down the road. And when you looked at Informa's numbers that came out today, you know, they on the corded side of things, the significant number that I looked at is they lowered the world numbers because they think Brazil and Argentina are not going to produce as much, but they significantly raised the China production number. And, you know, that's an area that, well, if we don't get it, you know, if we don't get it from Japan, we need to get it from Mexico or we need to get it from China. Those have been the big draws for us. And so I think we just have to be very cautious at this stage of the game. And, you know, in general, across the board today, we saw funds being heavy sellers. They've been heavy sellers yesterday. And it just says that the same type of hot air that brought us up can take us back down. Now, we had a really nice close today, and I think that's in anticipation of export sales tomorrow morning. So I think there was some profit taking at the end of the day, and that'll set the tone for everything else.
So crude sets the tone across the whole of the marketing sector in large part. And then as we look at, for instance, corn, I'm wondering what you're thinking about producers who have shut the bin doors and what that means for them today as opposed to last week on this same day before and after Thanksgiving and the OPEC meeting.
Well, I think what it means to them is, you know, anytime we do that and take that type of a step, we have to recognize, you know, that we need to be looking, is there carry in the market and we need to protect it. But even more than that, and I understand that a lot of guys put it in the bins because they didn't want to sell any corn before the new year. We hear that every single year, and it's not any different this year. But this year, I think it has a greater impact because what we're now doing is we're taking that marketing year and we're condensing it down and reducing it by at least 2 months. If you look back to 2013, I went into the NAS data. Nationally, 33% of the corn was sold before January 1st. Of the crop. Now, when you look at the size of our crop, I don't believe that that's the case for this year. I can't get stats on that yet. And then from January to May, we sold another 39%. That's 72% of the crop is normally sold by the time we go back onto the land and we begin to plant again. And so now let's take and say, I don't know what to say for how much was sold this year, but let's say we sold half as much. We sold maybe 16%. That means that 56% of that corn now is going to be condensed down into that January through May timeframe. So in the short term, we probably have some pretty good basis opportunities. There's no question that we should be taking advantage of some of that. In the long term, we could really see it become a very negative situation to basis as well as potentially to price, because if that much crop is still sitting in farmers' hands, when it comes into the elevator sells the board to protect themselves from having paid too much. You know, that's a typical risk step that they take. And so that has implications for the futures price, and then trying to push a lot of things together in a short period has implications for the, you know, for the basis besides.
Turn your attention from old crop to new crop and acreage battles. What might be the horizon at this time, what we know, for instance, about the sale of seeds in the United States, what kind of information do we have?
Well, we did see some info today, Todd, that came out actually from Monsanto. They said that their bean sales are ahead of last year. I'd have to think that that might be sticker shock when you look at the fact that corn seed does not appear to have come down in price. I thought it was interesting because they did say this is an extremely difficult selling environment. In other words, we're probably higher priced than most of our competition. And so in talking with a lot of seed people, you know, they're saying the same thing. Either seed sales have been relatively slow or they've seen more beans being sold. I think when you look at when I crunch numbers and actually look at the difference between the two, because we have a higher input cost on corn, of course, we have to have a higher price to be able to justify what's going, you know, being able to plant it. But I don't anticipate that we're going to see a tremendous amount of shift here in this part of the world, but the shift is most certainly going to come up in North Dakota. You know, like Jerry Gulkey said last week when we were at the meeting, you know, that's where we're going to see it. We're going to see it maybe down in the south also at the same time. But another little twist here to the whole thing is, okay, we're all figuring that we're going to see less corn acres and more bean acres because of the price comparisons. Okay, we get a ratio of, 2.38. But we're also hearing that we might see an adjustment to the APHs. In other words, they may drop out the lowest APHs in an effort to keep corn and bean acreage more balanced. You know, the other year they raised the APHs by 11 bushels. Will that type of thing happen again? And, you know, then that can throw a whole clinker into everything. But at this point in time, I'd have to say that most people are expecting that that's what's going to happen. And so our focus at, you know, as we move through the rest of this week and into the beginning of next week will be the USDA report that comes out next week, Wednesday. And I think the majority of people think it'll be a very blah report because we normally don't see any acreage changes on it or anything else. I'm not of the opinion anymore that there are blah reports. I'm going to put my seatbelt on when 11 o'clock comes around. And so extremely interesting markets. And I think, you know, that to me says, Todd, that if you're a producer in this marketplace or an end user in the marketplace, you've got to get yourself positioned so you're ready for whatever the market's going to do and take advantage of the opportunities that we've had. You know, we're just so very fortunate that we had the rally that we did because there would have been a lot of guys who would have had to sell corn at a much lower price due to all the logistics problems and everything else. So We have to keep in mind, just because the market goes up doesn't mean it can't go down again.
You mentioned next week's report. Of course, monthly, the USDA releases the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. And there are obviously a series of reports that come out from private sectors prior to those estimates. I think there are some Informa numbers out. Have you read through those?
Well, yes. I looked them over. You know, basically, they primarily were talking world, you know, which is pretty normal too, and doing a little bit on U.S. But when you looked at the big numbers, like on corn, they dropped the world by 2 million metric tons. Well, that's not very much, okay? But it is down from last year. China was higher. The U.S. was slightly lower. Okay, EU came in slightly lower. Brazil came in much higher. Ukraine came in almost the same, and so. It's almost anybody's guess on that. And beans, basically, there was just a slight drop in Argentina, but they actually raised Brazil's numbers. And so, hard to say there where anything. And when you look at wheat, well, you know, when you got wheat sitting up in the $6 and the high fives compared to corn that's sitting at in the threes and fours, there's not a competition situation there from a standpoint of feed. And so it doesn't pencil anymore. And so the wheat is going to be dependent entirely on what goes on in the world. In other words, you know, is Russia actually going to ban any wheat usage? Is Ukraine's crop going to be as bad as they think it might be? All of those types of things. But the market itself today pretty much said, well, we might have overdone that just a little bit. And they took back all the gains we had gotten the other day.
Jackie, thanks for taking the time with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
That's Jackie Vec. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Hey, visit our website at willag.org. There over on the right-hand side of the page, you'll find a menu item that says Outlook Meetings Schedule. Click on that and you'll see all the meetings that we have coming up, including some University of Illinois Extension meetings. The Ag Masters program is on the 15th and 16th of December. And that same week, the Illinois Farm Economics Summits kick off on Monday in DeKalb at Ferranda's Banquet Center. That's a new place, so if you're going to register or if you've been there in the past, make sure you know where that one is in DeKalb. Tuesday in Peoria at the Civic Center, again, a different venue. Wednesday in Springfield at the Crown Plaza. We've not been there with the Farm Economic Summits before. If you've not been one to one of these, please do visit our website and find all the information, because I'm bringing the Ag Economist along with me. Actually, they're bringing me along with them to all of these events. And I've been along with them for many, many years. It is a great morning-long program, and you should register. You can find all that information on our website. Of course, we'll be in Mount Vernon on Thursday at the Holiday Inn, and Friday, December the 19th, right here in Champaign at our usual iHotel Conference Center. That's the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those are the week of the 15th of December. Now, here's Dave Dickey with today's Agricultural News.
In agricultural news, after years of lobbying Congress, inland waterway operators could see their excise tax on fuel go up from 20 cents a gallon to 29 cents a gallon under a tax bill before the House of Representatives. The provision is one of two tax bills the House Rules Committee voted quickly to advance yesterday afternoon. The Rules Committee sent the bills to House leaders for floor debate later this week. Commodity groups have been major advocates for boosting funds going to river infrastructure. A closely watched survey shows that the 18-country Eurozone is not far from sliding back into recession. Financial information company Markit today says that its Purchasing Managers Index, a broad gauge of activity across the manufacturing and services sectors, slipped a full point to a 16-month low of 51.1 in November. The index still points to modest growth as it's above the 50 threshold between expansion and contraction. A new Rabobank report suggests improved world supplies of most grains and oil seeds should mean lower, less volatile prices in 2015, along with narrow trading ranges for many commodities. Rabobank says some of the key drivers next year will be selling and planning decisions by farmers especially with South American farmers moving from corn to soybeans and U.S. farmers likely to follow suit. Rabobank adds that world economic growth may also affect prices this year, as China will not likely meet its targeted growth rate, and the U.S. and the United Kingdom both expect expansion in 2015. Here are a few of Rabobank's forecasts. For lean hogs, U.S. pork production is expected to recover, easing lean hog futures and resulting in a forecast for 3% growth in production. For corn, increased crop storage and decreased acres will support prices, which will likely increase slightly in 2015. And for soybeans, improved global soybean supplies resulting from this year's record crop will cause prices to trade in a tighter range than in past years. The Bank of Russia intervened in the currency market for the second time this week today in an effort to defend the crumbling ruble. The central bank's latest move supported the ruble only briefly. The list of weights on the ruble is lengthy. Even aside from the tumble in oil prices, Russian banks and companies have to pay some $30 billion in foreign debt this month. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is, of course, Director of Agricultural Programming here at Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. Stephen Linneber from the Andersons is on the phone line. He's located at the Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. That's an ethanol plant. Stephen, thanks for joining us today. I suspect that most of harvest has wrapped up finally, and farmers are wondering what to do with corn in the bin. Is that right?
It definitely feels that way. Now that the corn's in the bin, farmers kind of feel like they're somewhat in the driver's seat to dictate what the value is going to be for the processor slash elevator to obtain ownership.
Are they correct? Are they in the driver's seat?
I think it is. I think it is. We've seen nothing but basis continue to firm up. Offers being received, a little far-fetched yet, but it definitely feels like it will shift there. The concerning thing is that the bid for DEES and January kind of remaining the same, to where it feels like if the corn moves in December, not so sure that improved value is going to be there for January, so maybe it makes most sense to move the bushels in December if the value's right.
And if you look a little further out, do you see it deteriorate into February and March or not?
I think historically I'm going to vote on that side. I think the next opportunity after January probably we see start as we approach planting season, where there's another push, as there's not as much guys available to move corn then, because they're obviously focused on the top priority and getting that next year's crop in the ground.
Have you folks been discussing the impact of OPEC's decision last week to keep the spigot open and to run crude oil to lower prices?
A little bit, and I mean the biggest thing that we're concerned there with is how is that going to impact how much ethanol is being used in a blend. Obviously, and when crude oil was high, obviously, and ethanol was available, and you could take it to the extreme of that blend wall to keep gas prices somewhat modest. But now we're looking at, does that keep, if crude oil continues to crash, does that have a negative impact on ethanol usage as well, demand? I mean, we certainly feel supply can be there. But now, how is that going to impact the dollars that, the corn's worth if ethanol isn't quite as highly sought after?
Thanks so much, Stephen. Stephen Linneber is with the Andersons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Ice Cream Box Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1838, Cleveland Abbey was born. A U.S. astronomer and meteorologist, he is considered the father of the U.S. Weather Bureau. The Weather Service was authorized by Congress on February 9, 1870, and Abbey joined the following January, bringing skills as the only person in the country with experience drawing weather maps from telegraphic reports and forecasting from them. In 1842, Ellen Swallow Richards was born. an American chemist. She was one of the founders of the home economics movement in the U.S. In 1910, George Claude first demonstrated his new invention, the neon light, at the Paris Motor Show. And in 1984, the world's worst industrial disaster occurred in Bhopal, India. Over 40 tons of poisonous gas leaked out of a Union Carbine pesticide factory. About 3,800 were killed, and over 300,000 people suffered acute respiratory problems, burning eyes and vomiting. An independent investigation showed a strong possibility of employee sabotage as a cause of the disaster, although it has never been proved. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon, the third day of December. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us now to discuss the weather forecast. We'd better start in the southern hemisphere, where the growing regions are beginning to head into, I suppose, full bloom. Tell me about conditions there.
Well, it looks fairly good at this point for Brazil. I think if we ignore the fact that we were a little slow getting into the fields initially, you'd have to rate this crop maybe about an 8 out of 10, I think. If you take into effect the crop was a little late going in the ground, I think the biggest impact on that is probably going to be in that second planting. A little later in the year, we may see a reduction in some of the area planted as a result of that. But otherwise, the crop that's in the ground right now is doing very well, and timely rains will prevail across Brazil for the entire two-week period coming up. There may be a little bit of a dryness issue in the far northeast, but that's a very small oilseed production region. Argentina, on the other hand, has some dryness that's building up in some of the western parts of the country. It looks like the rain potentials over the next 2 weeks look relatively good, but there's going to be some pockets that are missed. We'll need to watch that to see where they will end up being, but my guess is it'll be in portions of Cordoba and La Pampa. Those will be the two provinces that may run a little dry later on down the road.
Here in our part of the world, temperatures have moderated some. Can we expect more of the same over the next week?
Oh, absolutely. Yeehaw is the word of the day here on that. We are going to see warming tendencies occur across a big part of North America. In fact, the pattern is going to turn notably warmer biased for an extended period, maybe getting up to 10 days perhaps, and the temperatures will rise far enough above average that we'll see some snow melt in the northern plains and upper parts of the Midwest, as well as in portions of Canada's prairies. Some of this looks a lot like El Nino, and as El Nino continues to build up across the Pacific, we'll probably see some additional warm weather down the road.
Can you tell me a bit more about that particular object out there in the Pacific, the El Nino, because it's a changing in the temperatures of the ocean? It is in the beginning process, if I remember correctly. Tell me where we are at this point.
Definitely. We don't have an official El Nino event on our hands right now, but the definition is pretty strict, and we're close. We're close enough to go ahead and call it an El Nino event. It will strengthen as we move forward through these next few weeks, and by that we're going to see the ocean temperatures warm further above average. What that will do is change major weather patterns around the world, and we'll fall back into a pretty serious dryness issue in Australia. A good chance that some of the oil palm production areas in Indonesia and Malaysia will eventually start to turn drier. They have avoided that up to this point in time, but they will get dry. South Africa's corn crop will be suffering from dryness. There will be some good good timely rains, though. In South America, Brazil and Argentina should do relatively good in this environment. And back here across North America, we'll see an unusually warm winter across parts of western Canada and the northern U.S. plains. Both areas will probably be a little drier bias. Same thing will be true for below-average precipitation in the northern Midwest, while the southern U.S. will likely see frequent occurrence of rain, including Texas and the southwest hard red winter wheat belt.
That's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a very good Wednesday afternoon.